Pastoral Corydon and Miranda, music by William Boyce and the libretto by Kitty Clive. And that was the sopranos Julia Gooding and Philippa Hyde, with the tenor Joseph Cornwell, with Opera Restored, directed by Peter Holman. So Kitty Clive had an amazingly successful career, didn't she, Bertha Junkers? Did she also have a private life?
Not much. She married into the Clive family, best known through the family member, the Clive of India. But she and her husband separated 6 months after the marriage in 1733, and she really just devoted herself to her career thereafter.
But even the most talented performers, I guess, have a sort of shelf life, don't they? At what point did she finally slow down?
After 1755, she sang much less. And when she did sing, it was almost as if she was parodying either herself, or she also had a small industry in lampooning favourite Italian female singers whom she despised. And the London audiences absolutely loved this. So she became known for her mock Italian songs. But the straightforward singing, the Handel and so on, Thomas Arne, that was something that slowly eased off at the end of her career.
So she really became a national treasure, didn't she?
That's how I see her. I see her as a proper British worthy. Normally, we don't really acknowledge, I think, the contributions of women to the London stage and to London's and British cultural life. But Clive was really a powerful figure who helped to shape the musical landscape of English playhouses and of the London music industry.
I must say, it's a great shame that we haven't got time, because there's so much fantastic music that's associated with Kitty Clive. What would you say, though, Bertha Junkers, is her greatest legacy?
I think her greatest legacy is the gorgeous portrait of her, which hangs in the Garrick Club. It shows her holding a piece of music by Handel, and the piece of music she holds is Sweet Bird from Handel's L'Allegro ed il Penseroso. What I love about this portrait, besides the fact that it's beautiful, is that it shows the association she had with Handel, but above all, it shows what her reputation was. She was the sweet bird of Drury Lane.
Thank you for joining us.
The close of the air, Sweet Bird, from Handel's L'Allegro, Il Penseroso ed Il Moderato. And it ends the early music show. It was presented by Lucy Skeeping in conversation with Bertha Junkers and first broadcast in January. A few words now from Joan Bakewell about the next guest in her new series of Belief.
Ben Kingsley recalls a bitterly unhappy childhood and one that left him with a sense of isolation and a need to reach out to others.
There is a hymn, Joan, which has the refrain running through it, "You in your small corner and I in mine." And I remember as a seven-year-old at the back of assembly at school singing this hymn and being unable to get through the refrain because my throat closed and I was crying. I was in a very small corner, and someone somewhere else was in theirs. And I used to fall asleep wondering if there was anybody there.
Join me, Joan Bakewell, in conversation with Ben Kingsley this New Year's Day at 10:05 on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3. It's a little after 2 o'clock. And today's Sunday concert brings another highlight from the 2012 proms season. At the Royal Albert Hall on this occasion was Katie Derham.
Good evening and welcome to the Royal Albert Hall for a proms debut by a venerable American orchestra, the St. Louis Symphony. They're kicking off their first European tour in more than a decade, and I have to say there were lots of excited American voices backstage today, not least that of their much-loved music director, David Robertson. He's no stranger to the Proms, of course. It's his 20th appearance tonight, but we most often see him at the helm of the BBC Symphony Orchestra. Tonight, though, he's thrilled to be showcasing his American family with a rich and varied programme which includes Beethoven, the violin concerto, Brahms, Schoenberg and Gershwin.
Well, the musicians are all really pumped up and very excited to be here. Just the Royal Albert Hall, of course, is a legendary place and everyone knows the Brahms concerts, and so the excitement of starting our tour off by performing at the BBC Proms can't really be equaled by anything else. Not that Berlin, Lucerne and Paris are going to be a letdown, but at the same time it's nice to start on a really high note. The St. Louis Symphony is one of the warmest groups that I know, and probably the best way that I can describe their personality in musical terms is that they seem to reach right for the stuff of what the meaning of the music is about. The program is about this correspondence between musical personalities. And this, to me, makes sense for an American orchestra to do, because we are about this combination of the old. We are the second oldest orchestra in the country, formed in 1880, and the new, and the cross communication between different cultures, whether European, American, or Asian.
David Robertson there. So we are going to start with Brahms, the tragic overture. Written at the same time as the very cheery academic festival overture, it couldn't be more different in tone. The title may be non-committal, but it's thought to have originated in a project to stage Goethe's Faust. You don't need to know that story, though, to hear a tale of human defiance against adverse fate. Well, the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra are on stage under their concertmaster, David Halen, and they're standing now to welcome their music director, David Robertson, to lead them in a performance of Brahms's Tragic Overture.
Thank you.
Brahms's Tragic Overture, performed here at the Commons for the very first time by the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, conducted by their musical director since 2005, David Robertson. Wonderful way to get their debut concert off and running. The warmth with which this orchestra and their conductor feel for each other is palpable. Dave has just come back on to take another bow and has brought them to their feet in front of this very appreciative sellout crowd here at the Royal Albert Hall. Well, from Brahms to the composer he revered and who he never felt he could really compare himself with, Beethoven. We're going to hear the violin concerto, played by Christian Tetzlaff. It was written in 1806, and with it he set a standard by which all subsequent violin concertos were measured. It might be one of the best-known works in the repertoire, with its air of threatened innocence in the first movement, then the prayer-like second movement, and the raucous dancing third. As Christian told me earlier, though, it's the timpani you have to listen out for, setting the tone from the very first bars, even through to the cadenza.
The timpani and the motive of the timpani, which gets passed through all instruments, is continuously there. So it's no wonder that Beethoven incorporated it in his cadenza, which he wrote for piano. When he made the piece into a piano concerto, he wrote a cadenza and I just transcribed it. It goes off into almost crazy direction. He quotes the last movement in this cadenza, and after the fast march of the cadenza, he goes back into the ground speed of the movement and sets the mood and tempo for the beautiful ending of this movement.
It's very effective.
That's good. Yeah, I can't take any credit for it.
Well, Christian has often played with the St. Louis Symphony, and David Robertson, when I spoke to him earlier, was full of praise for his playing.
When Christian Tetzlaff plays a piece of music, he plays the piece of music, and he happens to play that piece of music on a violin. And so the thing that's really fascinating is that it is a violin concerto, but it is more about what is going on in the music than showing off the concerto itself.
The conductor tonight, waxing lyrical about the soloist Christian Tetzlaff. Well, we heard David earlier talk about this program that he's put together for the prom tonight, showing the common links between composers who on paper at least seem perhaps a little unconnected, although of course the link between Brahms and Beethoven has been very well documented. Brahms lived for years in the shadow of Beethoven. He had what can only be described as an inferiority complex. It rendered him completely unable to even attempt to write a symphony for years and years. In the end, of course, the people of Vienna put them on equal pedestals, burying Brahms between the tombs of Beethoven and of Schubert. Well, as you can hear, the orchestra are retuning briefly as they prepare to perform Beethoven's violin concerto. We'll be awaiting the arrival of Christian Tetzlaff and David Robertson to the stage very soon. This is the first tour that the St. Louis Symphony have taken to Europe, and I think it's 14 years, and as I mentioned earlier, they are extremely excited. I have to say, I think they were even more pleased that the sun was shining for them in London. The mood, very happy indeed. But here come Christian Tetzlaff and David Robertson to perform Beethoven's great violin concerto.
Thank you. Thank you.
utterly transporting performance of Beethoven's Violin Concerto by Christian Tetzlaff, who's being applauded by conductor David Robertson and by the entire orchestra of the St. Louis Symphony here for the first time at the Proms. The third time that Christian has played the Beethoven Violin Concerto here at the Proms. He still has some way to go before beating the record set by Ida Haendel, who played it 15 times between 1937 and 1988. Back on stage, just listen to the cheers.
You know, it sounds so obvious to say that's such a difficult, challenging piece, but you know, it's so hard that it took more than 50 years until it became a regular part of the violin soloist repertoire. People just couldn't play it.
And the timpanist getting special mention by David Robertson there. We heard, of course, how crucial he is to the whole piece in that interview with Christian Tetzlaff earlier. And a fine example of what David Robertson was saying earlier about how this orchestra play as a single unit. They know Christian Tetzlaff, they love playing with him, but they obviously also love playing for David Robertson. David now bringing different sections of the orchestra to their feet. The woodwinds are now on the strings. And Thomas Stubbs, the timpanist, getting another mention. Well, I wonder if Christian is listening to that. He's coming back on stage now with David Robertson. But David is taking a seat. I think we could be in for an encore. Well, isn't that something? Christian Tetzlaff just played the Beethoven Violin Concerto and then, as an encore, just gave us just a little bit of solo bar. The Partita in C major, that was the Allegro Assai. Warmly appreciated by the crowd here at the Royal Albert Hall and bringing the first half of tonight's Prom to an end. The St. Louis Symphony warmly applauding Christian.
as he comes back to take off his sixth or seventh, I've lost count, bow here at the Royal Albert Hall. David Robertson, Anderson Lewis Symphony Orchestra, bringing us tonight a varied but very cleverly themed programme in which sometimes unlikely influences and admirations are revealed. We're going to hear Gershwin and Schoenberg in this half. Not likely bedfellows, you might think. One, the king of the American jazz age, the other, the acknowledged high priest of 20th century avant-garde. But you would be wrong, as David explained to me earlier.
Well, this programme, I suppose, really is connected up with two composers who became firm tennis partners in Los Angeles, Schoenberg and Gershwin. And partly, I think, because for Gershwin, who had come from popular music, the degree of sophistication and technical virtuosity that someone like Schoenberg was showing in his composition was something very attractive. And I think you hear in the American in Paris, following Schoenberg's really imaginative orchestra, just how much Gershwin was really working on the subtleties of orchestration. Many times when you hear American in Paris, it tends to be played just like a pop piece. And in fact, you can hear that Gershwin was such a deep musician, and that's something that Schoenberg recognized.
Well, first we are going to hear the Schoenberg, his five pieces for orchestra, his 1908 response to a tragic and tumultuous time in his private life at the heart of the Expressionist movement in Vienna. His wife had left him for a younger man, the artist Richard Gerstl, the rising star of the Expressionist movement. Schoenberg eventually convinced her to return with their children, but then Gerstl committed suicide. Well, it's hard not to link these events and the inevitable turmoil they provoked with the extreme emotional temperature, if you like, of Schoenberg's music in the years immediately afterwards. So, in the five pieces, each piece a kind of super condensed dramatic scene, and each of them seems to want to say so much but without quite revealing what. First we have Premonitions, which introduces a sense of restless anxiety. Then The Past, which opens with a solo cello whose wistfully expressive tone contrasts really strongly with the brutal force of the preceding movement. Then Colours, which is often cited as a study in orchestration, a musical kaleidoscope, if you like. Then Peripeteia, which is the turning point in ancient Greek drama, often occasioned by a character learning something of which he had previously been ignorant. Well, I think we can see where that all came from. And then the fifth piece is called the Obbligato Recitative. That title, it's elusive, isn't it? It conceals more than it reveals. Well, here comes David Robertson to conduct the St. Louis Symphony in Schoenberg's five pieces for orchestra.
Thank you. Thank you.
The Obbligato Recitative, number 5 of Schoenberg's 5 pieces for orchestra, performed by this Lewis Symphony, conducted by David Robertson. And that was the original orchestration, which Schoenberg wrote in 1908 for a large orchestra. He subsequently did rewrite it for a much smaller ensemble, but the version we heard tonight, with the mighty forces of the St. Louis Symphony, was as he had first intended it. David Robertson shaking the hand of David Halen before leaving the stage, returning in just a few moments to perform some Gershwin. He mentioned, didn't he, in that interview earlier, that Schoenberg was a great friend of the multi-talented, multifaceted, commercially successful, always popular George Gershwin. They were friends and neighbours in LA. They were tennis partners, they were chess buddies, and the very wealthy Gershwin sponsored some of Schoenberg's work. I found a marvellous film on YouTube of Schoenberg and various pals, which was shot by Gershwin himself, and you can see the tennis court in the background. It's really atmospheric, great fun to watch. Now, when it came to music, the two of them were, perhaps quite surprisingly, huge admirers of one another. Schoenberg wrote later about Gershwin, "I know he is an artist and a composer. He expressed musical ideas, and they were new, as is the way in which he expressed them." When you listen to the next piece, which is Gershwin's popular American in Paris, written in Europe and meant, as the title suggests, to tell the tale of a tourist in Montparnasse, just think of how much the two composers must have listened to each other's work and influenced each other's orchestration. Well, on the surface, an American in Paris is a really light piece. It's rather a fun piece for an American orchestra's debut performance here at the Proms, too. At its premiere, opinion was, well, it was mixed. Most people loved it, after all. It was Gershwin, they loved all his music. But some critics liked it, they called it happy and full of life. Others, though, hated it, calling it silly and long-winded. But let's be honest, it's nearly 90 years on, and it's still being played and enjoyed in concert halls around the world. I think Gershwin might be having the last laugh. He wrote the piece in the spring of 1928. He was travelling in Paris, meeting some of his heroes like Prokofiev and Ravel, Milhaud and Poulenc. The story goes that he asked Ravel for lessons in orchestration, and the older man refused, saying there was nothing that he could teach Gershwin that he hadn't already mastered. In his words, Gershwin wanted this orchestral work to portray the impressions of an American visitor in Paris as he strolls about the city and listens to the various street noises and absorbs the French atmosphere. There is a section as well, though, when clearly that American visitor gets rather homesick, and you can hear the American blues influence then to reflect that. But let us hear it now. Gershwin's American in Paris, David Robertson returning to the stage to conduct these Americans in London, the St. Louis Symphony. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gershwin's An American in Paris, performed by the St. Louis Symphony under David Robertson at this, their debut prom. David Robertson coming back to the stage now, climbing up the stairs to bring the percussion section to their feet. And indeed, they're getting a standing ovation from some people very near me. And then the extensive brass section. The special mention possibly going to the saxophonists. Nathan Nabb, J. Michael Holmes and Adrienne Honnold. The leader, concertmaster David Halen, taking a bow. And a minor change of personnel taking place now on the stage, with David Robertson bringing everybody to their feet to possibly mask that. But I suspect that after one American classic, we could be getting another as an encore. Not before another bow, though, from David Robertson, musical director of the St. Louis Symphony since 2005, principal guest conductor of the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and soon to be artistic director of the Sydney Symphony Orchestra too. This is a man who's going to collect a lot of air miles. He's back on stage, bringing the trumpet player Thomas Drake to his feet. Principal trombone Timothy Myers and tuba player Michael Sanders. Clarinetist Diana Haskell and now the whole gang on their feet. I think it's fair to say that the prom's audience have enjoyed this concert. David's now asking if they want an encore, and you heard the response. We'll be right back.
the overture to Leonard Bernstein's Candide, the encore which ended this concert given during the 2012 BBC prom season by the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, conducted by David Robertson. The presenter at the Royal Albert Hall was Katie Derham. Well, tomorrow evening on Radio 3, we're rounding off our year with another two concerts from this year's proms. At 7:30, Eric Whittaker conducts a varied programme of vocal music. And at 9:00, there's a second chance to hear The Last Night of the Proms, and that'll take us right up to the chimes of Big Ben when we welcome 2013. And the 2012 proms highlights continue into 2013. On Wednesday night, for example, there's another chance to hear this year's London Sinfonietta Prom, six classics of post-war music, including Ligeti's Poem with its 100 ticking metronomes, the late Jonathan Harvey's electronic mix of bell and treble voice, Mortuus Plango, Louis Andriessen's minimalist musical clock, De Snelheit, and John Cage's infamous 4 minutes and 33 seconds of silence. That's our prom revisited on Wednesday night at 9:40. And as well as the proms, there are daily weekday instalments this Christmas fortnight of Covent Garden's Wagner. Donald MacLeod has the details.
Previously, we met our hero Siegfried, who carries on his shoulders the weighty dreams and hopes of his grandfather, Wotan, the Lord of the Gods. We heard how he passed the first big test of his young life and triumphantly reforged the shattered pieces of his father Siegmund's sword and strode out fearlessly to face his next challenge. In a world of dragons, talking birds and enchanted forests, we hear him come face to face with the terrifying, fire-breathing Fafner guarding the Nibelung gold, whose chief treasure is the all-powerful ring. I hope you'll join me for the second act of Siegfried, the next instalment of our Christmas broadcast of the Covent Garden Ring Cycle, act by act, tomorrow afternoon at 4:30 on Radio 3.
Well, back to this afternoon, and in a moment, Choral Evensong. And then at 5:00...
The worlds of jazz and choral music collide in tonight's edition of The Choir. Composer and reeds player John Sermon leads the way in his new piece, Lifelines, inspired by machines, the power of nature, and also an epic feat of human bravery. And I'm not just talking about the male choir from South Yorkshire, who were brave enough to take the whole thing on. Stay tuned to hear how they got on in The Choir with me, Alla Jones, coming up at 5:00.
Here on BBC Radio 3, we're broadcasting between 90 and 93 FM. On digital radio, you can also listen to us live online in high-definition sound. It's 4:00 and time now for a meditation on Christ's Nativity, a service first broadcast in December 2008. It was recorded in the chapel of St John's College, Cambridge, with the choir of Clare College, Cambridge. The service is based around a sequence of Christmas carols by John Taverner, Ex Maria Virgine, which received its first complete broadcast in this service. The sequence was commissioned by Timothy Brown and the choir of Clare College, together with individual commissions from three American choirs and from the BBC for the Radio 3 Choir of the Year competition. Taverner completed Ex Maria Virgine on Christmas Day 2005, and it's dedicated to the Prince of Wales and the Duchess of Cornwall in joyful celebration of their marriage. Before the sequence begins, the service opens with the words of the Angelus, followed by a chorale from Vaughan Williams' Christmas cantata, Hodier, the Blessed Son of God, only in a crib full poor did lie.
The angel of the Lord brought tidings to Mary.
And she conceived by the Holy Spirit.
Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with you. Blessed art you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb, Jesus.
When the fullness of time had come, God sent his Son, born of a woman, so that we might receive adoption as God's children. My brothers and sisters, in the name of Christ, I welcome you. We have come together in this Christmas season to give thanks and praise to God for the birth as one of us of his beloved Son. We give thanks for the great mystery of the Incarnation, that the eternal Son of God, the divine Logos, took upon himself our human nature, was conceived by the Holy Spirit, and born of the Blessed Virgin Mary, the Theotokos, the God-bearer, and for our sake became fully and truly human. So let us listen to traditional words that proclaim his birth, but in a new musical setting. As we hear these words anew, may the gospel of our salvation, through the coming of the Christ child, his life, death, mighty resurrection, and glorious ascension, be given new life in us, and through us heard afresh in the world God loved and sent his Son to save. But first, let us offer our prayer to the throne of grace, in the words our Saviour himself taught us, saying, Our Father, which art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done, in earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive them that trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Behold, the handmaid of the Lord.
Be it unto me.